The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 868. It's The Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Peter.
Yes, hello.
And is Steve there?
It's me.
Do you know what, this is the first time, Steve, we went on the WhatsApp group today and you said, I'm in Ibiza. Were you really in Ibiza or was that a joke?
No, I've been in Ibiza for a week. I came back later on.
And I like to breathe in through my nostrils when I say something that makes a statement. I've been in Ibiza with you. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, why are you breathing like that, Steve? Have you had a tough week?
Why am I what?
Why are you breathing like that? Have you had a tough week?
I'm breathing very normally.
Is it now?
So, Steve, London last week, Ibiza this week. You're a bit of a jet setter, aren't you?
Paris.
Yeah. Paris next week, yeah.
Boom. Hang on, why are you in Ibiza?
I'm not breathing like that.
Why were you in Ibiza? No, seriously, why were you there?
I went on holiday for a week.
You're not breathing like that. Can you tell you're doing that? Can you not tell you're doing that?
I'm breathing. No, I can't hear it. It's clearly the phone is picking up my breathing.
After every Saturday. So are you been on holiday? You've been on holidays, Steve. Hang on, you were on holidays left, right, and centre here. You're on holidays a couple of weeks back, weren't you? You went to Spain with your boyfriend.
No, I didn't. I went to Portugal.
Portugal. Oh yeah, there's nicer people in Portugal than Spain, wasn't it? That's right.
That's right.
A survey of three people in the hotel, and Steve, they're a lot nicer than Spanish people. So what? Ibiza, who did you go with then?
10 of my friends. We got a little villa out there, and had a few little VIP packages around the island.
Very nice.
What does that mean? What does that mean? I have no idea what that means. A few VIP packages around the island. What does that mean?
Very important person.
Well, yes, very important people.
Important person package. What is that? If I can have a very important person, what is that? A couple of pies, pasties. What do you get? What's in there? Cigars, champagne. But I don't know. What is it? What does that mean?
It just means we didn't pay.
Why is that then?
Like cream and whatever it is, and Cafe Del Mar. I don't know, I'm just names that I've heard.
That's it, Pete. You know, you're down with the kids, you know them.
Space.
Doesn't exist anymore.
Oh.
Doesn't it? It does.
No.
If you look in the sky,
it's out there, Steve. It's out.
It's called High now, Space.
It's quite high, Space.
I see what they've done there. They've gone from space to high. Okay, someone just said, I heard recently, though, that it's not now the party island anymore. It's like, it's calmed down a bit.
It's still a party island, but it's been taken over by the snobbery and the money, really. Yeah, it's just too expensive out there, and it's not what it used to be.
Okay, I see. All right. Did you find a nice little girlfriend for yourself?
I didn't know that. I think everyone's a little bit young out there for me, to be honest.
Are they?
Yeah, it's very young out there.
Maybe Steve. Maybe think about this. Maybe you were too old.
No, I agree. I'm very much too old, but now you're not never too old, Robbie. But it has. I don't think I'll go back again.
Either they're too young or you're too old. I'm suggesting if that's the average group of age that goes there regularly, I'm thinking maybe you've grown out of it. Do you think?
But they're not.
The nice parts of Ibiza, though, not just about parties, is it? It's about.
Yes. No, we had a lovely villa. It was like a 5-bedroom villa, our own pool in the middle of nowhere. It was nice. Very nice.
All right. Well, there we are then. All right, let's get into the stocks then. Peter, has your week been as exciting as Steve's VIP packages everywhere?
Not as exciting, but it's been busy. I've been up to a lot of things, nothing to do with stocks and shares, really. But I have been keeping an eye on the markets. I've seen a few things moving and a shaking.
Go on.
I see ECR Minerals was one that caught my eye because it recovered a bit, didn't it?
It recovered and then pulled back a bit,
yes.
I'm waiting for news on that. First of all, the drilling results were a little disappointing originally, but they've still got lots of areas they're looking at, and so there's always a good chance to look up with something. And they've got cash, you know, they've got a good financial backer, they've got guys who've done it before, so. It's a turnaround story. There's management in there with Craig Brown there, and you know, hopefully they've got Chinese backers, which were small caps, small resource stocks. One of the biggest hurdles ever is finance. And once you've got that sorted, once you've got a backer there with a bit of cash, bit of coin, you know, a bit of mouchoir, then it's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? Do you know what? BT's annoying me. They're hitting lows at the moment. They haven't seen these lows for a long time. But I've taken sort of a bit of confidence from a broken note from Barclays, right? Now, they looked at three areas, of important areas of BT. Now, this is part of our, of course, 50 trades, £1,000, £100,000, 50 trades or less, acquiring 10% each one, rolling on to the next one. So a gain of 10%. We've done the first two trades we've done better than 10%, and 21% and so 13%, I think. And BT's our third choice. It would have been Next, but it went away from us. Then it turns out Next did do that 10% in quickly. And Pete still held him because he bought in by not cancelling a limit order when Steve and I did. So are you still, do you still hold Next? Because they've had a bit of a rally this week as well, haven't they?
Yeah, I'm still up in them, guys. As I talked about that before, it was a change in strategy for me and it's worked out well.
What percentage are you up on there, Pete?
I was solid 7% up.
Wow. Are you 7% up? What do you buy at? 39? You're not 7%, you liar. No, it's 43.50 they are. 43.54. You bought at 39.99, didn't you?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Oh, you are, yeah, 70. Yeah, very much. Yeah, so of course.
There
you
go.
Your dividend. Oh, by the way, in BT we've been paid our dividend.
And the dividend, yeah, got reinvested
and
there as
and
well.
And dividend, yes, there we are. By the way, we were paid our dividend in BT, but of course this experiment is looking at big stocks only with pay dividends. So listen, Barclays brokers looked at three areas of BT: the open reach, their regulated prices. That's one area. Payments to service, these are the three areas that we're having problems with. Payments to service providers relating to delays in connecting them on time. This is their OpenReach section as well, because they were fined for that, because obviously OpenReach is in charge of the network, so other people like Virgin Media and all that use OpenReach. But they were found, BT, to be delaying work on in a competitor's lines. A bit dodgy that, isn't it, really? Mm. So they were sort of favouring their own BT customers rather than other customers. Yeah, and also they look at the pension scheme. Now, the Barclays, they retain their overweight rating. They're a target of £4.50 on the stock, which is not too bad because they're at £2.83 at the moment. That's more than a 40% upside. We're looking for 10%. Now, I looked at 3 years, right? And one of the things that's quite good, they put £300 million aside, BT have, for this this thing of delaying service to competitors. But Barclays suggests this figure may be too high, particularly in light of Virgin Media owner Liberty Global yesterday booking a positive one-off $22 million in its Q2 results, which is likely to relate to this issue. So they reckon BT's probably paid them $22 million. Now, they're one of the biggest, Liberty Global are one of the biggest operators, right? So if they're only paying $22 million to the biggest operator, then there's a couple of other players in there, but they reckon, Barclays reckon the maximum fine they'll have to pay is about $150 million. So they've got $150 million that'll go on as a profit, you know? So, first of all, so there's that there. They also reckon that the Ofcom now has been so hard on OpenReach about pricing that I think the return on capital for charge control services on that area is 10.4%. So they get a return on that of 10.4%, which is close to the cost of capital, which is around about 9-10%. So they're not overcharging on that service. They can't go any low on prices, because essentially they'll be losing money on it. And Ofcom wouldn't want to do that anyway, because they say you wouldn't want to lose money on a business because they have to start laying off people, you know?
So OpenReach is being stripped out, isn't it?
They're still in talks with the regulator, and you see. It'll be a lot more hard work for the regulator to split it up and break it up. Mm. They would prefer for BT just to play the game fairly. And I mean, I think now they're doing that. And if you look at BT's recent sort of appointments, they have been one from the regulator, so an ex-Ofcom person, all this. So I think now they're playing ball, the regulator has seen that they're playing ball, and they say, as long as this carries on, it'll be fine. And you've been fined anyway for what they've done.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier for them just to play fairly rather than them to try and break it up and split it amongst all different players in the market, you know? Or spin it off or something. And the third issue they looked at was pensions. Right? And the Barclays noted that last month the company suggested preparing to close its defined benefit scheme for existing members. Now, it's quite expensive, a defined benefit scheme. This accounts for about 33,000 of the plan's 300,000 strong membership. And it wouldn't change the size of the deficit, but would reduce the annual service costs by a lot. So they reckon, £4.50 target on, they did an in-depth research, so they reckon, otherwise marketing's going well or business is going well. So they see it as, having a good upside potential. It's annoying at the moment. It's sitting around a mark which, I mean, 480, what is it?
283. 284, yeah.
It's quite a low. I'm thinking, what's going on here? What the heck is going on here? You know, so It's quite annoying, but
it's going to be a bit of time, isn't it? Unfortunately, it's not going to be anything immediate that's going to change that.
Yes.
It will come eventually.
Just in patience.
Yeah, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Looking at some other stocks and news out this week, boys. Boom. Audio boom. Go on.
Oh yeah.
What was that about?
Well, I was going to say before you go to audio boom, I've not been looking at this my stocks this week, obviously.
As per usual.
But I did check one this afternoon, and I've noticed I've gone massively into the blue again, the plus from Asia Met. What's happened there? Has they've done something this week?
Yeah, there's been rumours on social media, right, that they changed it to a production license on Bhutan. You know Bhutan? Yeah, you know Bhutan! Yeah. That's the big the resource. So they've got copper gold resource that's about 4 or 5 times as big as the current project they're working on, BKM. They're waiting to go for a production license there. And it's in the planning. It's with the regulators, in Indonesia. And there's been rumours that that's happening. But also, sometimes things are delayed. I mean, you see, like someone like JP Morgan came on board a couple of weeks back. It takes a while for people to sink in there, I think other people may be looking at it now, maybe buying, so it's a bit of influence there. So a lot of things are going the way. And also you've got copper prices. It's, strong, right? I mean, what's the price of copper at the moment? It's over $3,000. I mean, it's going towards, in fact, it's towards what their basic, what's it called? PE is it the P? The P, the pre-economic assessment. They modelled it on 325, I think, or 3025, and that's where it's at the moment. So it's not far off. Yeah, copper's doing very well. It's over $3,000. It's just going well. Copper's going well. Asia Met's doing well. I think copper is good. I mean, and if you look at long-term fundamentals of copper, all people going on about cobalt and all these stuffs and these hot new commodities, but copper's in everything. You need copper for everything. And even these new cars, take, like, I think it's something like 60 kilograms of copper is in an old car, but it's something like 150 in a new sort of, electric vehicle. So copper's always needed, It's one of those things that Dr. Copper, is always needed. Old Dr. Cops. To audio boom out through the quarter sort of results out. And that 1.49 million for the third quarter, a 32% increase on quarter two, which is good. Now, they only need a 14% increase from quarter three to quarter four to break 5 million revenue this year. And I think the target is 5.4 million. So they need about 40% increase to beat the Allenby's broker, 5.4 million. But I reckon they'll do that. Because I think now they're only starting to really start to monetize. And they've still got lots of ad spots not filled that they have potential to fill, And they've got their own, they've got lots of things coming online, like their own productions. When you produce something yourself, you have the potential to earn a lot more money from it, And it's a Netflix model, Netflix went from just broadcasting other people's productions to doing their own productions, And they realise there's a lot more money in that. And so Audible have done that. They've got several podcasts coming out. They'll do that. I think it was very interesting, actually. Right? There's WPP. I don't know if you've heard of WPP. They're a massive FTSE 100 company. Martin Sorrell. So Martin Sorrell, who's the CEO, is the highest paid guy in the FTSE. Pay cut last year. He went from 60 million to 48 million, or 70 million to 48 million. I don't know how he's going to live on that. But,
struggle.
Yeah, but WPP took a stake in a podcasting company, and that was off the back of them reporting bad figures a couple of weeks back, saying traditional advertising is changing. The face of it is changing. It's been disrupted by digital, and so it's quite interesting to see that what the big boys are even now starting to realise podcasting is where it's at, and it's a good way forward. It's not only where it's at,
but their share price has taken a hammering, hasn't it?
Yeah, WPP. And I tell you what, I spoke to Rob on Friday, he was on the podcast, Rob Proctor. Very interesting, because he said, apparently, by 2020, I've been looking to get one of these now, because my mother and father said in the week, my father said, Mammy wants to listen to music on demand. I thought, what, really? And said, what do you mean? He did say on demand. He said, she wants to say, I want to listen to Elvis, And I thought, you have to buy one of these Google things, like Alexa, or is it Amazon Echo, isn't it? Or Google Home.
But you can play Spotify through Google Home, or you can just have Apple Music, or and play through your Sonos speaker, or there's all sorts of options.
But listen to this. This is what Rob said. This was interesting. At the moment, Rob... bought something called Sonar, which is part of Rob's idea anyway. And what it does, it textualizes audio, so it transcripts audio into words. And then basically fills up, you know, metadata is filled with that. So and that's what's being programmed into, you know, Audio Boom sort of software and all this stuff. So when people want to advertise, want to pick up or target words or phrases or anything or companies, they can use that, you know. And he said, looking at research, they're in, by 2020, 75% of all households in the US says will have one of these, you know, voice controlled speaker things, you know.
Yeah.
So either at the moment, I think the leader is. Because Echo's been out longer, as an Amazon Echo's been out longer than Google Home. So, apparently, Google Home is better sounding, but you're probably better off plugging in the bigger speakers. But Echo's a lot more tricks in it, though. You can do a lot more with Echo. You can ask a lot more things, a lot more stuff you can do with it. But go on, what
I've
you
been
say?
Playing with both of them, actually.
Have you?
Yes, Alexa. I've been playing with Alexa. She's very good.
What do you reckon? What do you reckon, then, Alexa?
Well, so they're both. They're both incredible if you think about it. The most impressive thing for me was like the real-time results is actually really impressive. The way that it understands what you're saying and within milliseconds, you know, is able to then deliver an answer. And I'm talking live, real-time. So you could say, what's the football score or whatever now, you know, in a match or whatever, and they'll tell you right there. And it, all right, it's probably a five-minute delay because it's cached, you know, from whatever the latest they've got. But they've got every single thing going on in the world right there, and you just have to, and you don't even have to touch anything, you just talk to the damn thing. So it's impressive, the real time stuff. It's got a long way to go, I think, in terms of development, but I think it's really impressive as it is, and for purchasing and creating lists of stuff to do and all this sort of stuff it's very impressive the way it's developing. So
wait until Apple bring out their Siri they'll win over other.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, against Google, they're quite big. Google, aren't they? You know, and Amazon. It's a battle of the giants. But I mean, whatever happens, right? So this is the stats. Right? So 75% of all households will have one of these. Google reckoned by 2020, 50% of all searches will be done via audio. And that means, I didn't understand what Rob was getting at here. And that means the content will have to be delivered back in audio, of course, right? For the speakers. Yeah. And the search market is worth about $70 billion a year. So I was saying, so what's the relevance, Rob? He said, well, listen, we have news, you know, channels like Sky, Associated Press, all the big news channels uploading. Associated Press, for example, upload about 24 bulletins a day to every half an hour, you know? So if you search for something like, for example, say, okay, Alexa, what's happening with Hurricane Irma, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't, you can't go to a live feed, of course, because that live feed, say, you can't go to a radio station's feed because it's not being transcripted in any way. So it'll have to go to a source like Audio Boom, where it's, you know, just been transcripted in the last 5-10 minutes, you know? So it'll go to them, pick it up, they can insert adverts off the back of that. And I think that's amazing. So he said, not only now are we getting into, you know, I mean, podcasts are quite big anyway, I know that they pick up traction, but he said, the market is getting bigger because when most people have these things, you know, the advertising potentially is huge. So essentially it's like, you know, on Google, normally type in now a search, it won't. Yeah. It'll be by audio, but also you get audio adverts on the back of it. And he said they'll have to plug into something like this where, and I can't remember the stats. He said, but the amount of audio being uploaded to Audio Boom in a day is phenomenal from all different from all around the world. You know, from sources all around the world. And he said, so you know, we'll you know, come up very high in search results, and we just plug in advertising on the back of that. So I think, you know, it's a huge way to go yet in podcasting. I don't think it's even started, you know. So, because, you know, tech really enables that, doesn't it, you know?
Yes.
So does that mean people will be able to listen to our podcast but without our voices on it?
If people say, listen to some three idiots talking rubbish on the internet, maybe some mention stocks and shares sometimes, or maybe mentioning some guy's defunct love life, then we'll come up to the top of the search ratings there, Steve. Yeah,
cool,
exactly right. Yeah,
I tell you what, I mean, I did buy a stock today this week, boys.
Right, what
I thought I'd be a bit topical, so I bought Hurricane Energy.
Right, well done.
Yeah, do you know anything about
Hurricane? Such a thing?
Yeah.
I do, because they have an office in a business park just by where I work.
Do they?
Yeah.
HUR's ticker. I'll tell you about it. Right? They hit the headlines a while back for having the biggest, I don't know what it was, the biggest resources, oil resources in the UK in fractured base, in the North Sea or something ridiculous. And they've got around 1 billion barrels of oil now. But if you look at it, they've got all different oil fields, right? They've tested and all this, looked at and researched. And but the next one, the one they're going to drill, they recently raised $500 million, right? At 32 pence a share. And so that means they're ready for the first drill, which is going to be 2019, start of 2019. They're going to be producing around about 17,000 barrels a day from Lancaster Field, right? They've got other fields as well. Now that is going to equate to around about at $40 a barrel of oil, and now we're above that, we're closer to 50. They're going to be generating about $100 million per annum net profit, right? So at $50, it goes to $150 million dollars a year. So you know, if you put that sort of those earnings on a piece of 10, that's a lot more than their market cap already, and also that's just one of the many fields they have, and they've got a lot of resources there. And I'm just thinking, this is and also just you know, the fact they raise $500 million, that's 32 pence, and now 27 pence. You know, I thought I got the opportunity to get in. It's quiet, even while, you know, the headlines are on real hurricanes. No one's paying attention to hurricane energy at the moment. They've gotten the news out for a bit of it. And so I just think that's the time to take advantage of it, Shane. And do you know what I'm starting to do now as a sort of, I'm just trying to get into the habit.
Ramp stocks?
No, just trying to get in the habit of putting actually a predetermined target on something, you know?
Right.
I mean, if it's something I don't want to hold forever, I mean, and I see, you know, a decent 50% in this within you know, because I was going through spreadsheets. I love spreadsheets.
Hold on.
Why?
A decent 50% based on what?
On no news flow at all whatsoever, right? We're under the placing price, and looking at basically the value here, the amount of cash they've got their market cap is only about 600 million, right? They've got over 500 million,
yeah, okay,
dollars, sorry, in cash. So you're thinking, hang on, what about their assets? They're going to be producing 17,000 barrels a day starting in January. So they're hardly valued, and they've got other oil fields as well. So this company should be a FTSE 250 company. You know, I mean, quite easily. And it's just at the moment, there's no news out. It's quiet, and that's the way AIM is. Otherwise, people just, you know, trade shares. There's mostly traders. So I'm just thinking, I'm looking for 50% in this. And I looked at a spreadsheet. I'm saying, basically, if you start off with a half decent amount of money, and over 20 years you manage to do so 20-30% a year, just look at the compound interest you get off that, just 20% a year off your entire portfolio, right? If you aim, don't be too greedy, and aim for 30% on each share, 20-30% on each share, you'll be doing very well in 10 years time. You know, very well.
How'd you work that out, Jess?
Even the market guys, even the sort of, you know, good fund managers, you know, would like to get 20% a year. So I mean, But
that comes down to the discipline thing, I think, and then not being upset when it goes to 100 or, you know, you miss out. But being disciplined in every single stock and going, yeah, take the 30% and walk away and move on, and, you know, and always do that. And then I totally agree, yeah. And compounding interest, the compounding effect of that is it's really good.
But go on.
It's easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah. But do you know what? It's like that. So don't be afraid. Obviously, some stocks, you don't have to take 30. You could take more. But I mean, you know, you could just sit there and... But it's just about also risk. It's knowing what stocks are risky, what are not. And I'll tell you what, I had an email from Richard, who's a fan of the show. And he said,
"Hello, Richard."
He said, "I just is right. Get your take on this. Maybe one to ask the boys on the weekend podcast. So, as interested to know, interested to know how many stocks is reasonable to own in your portfolio." And I don't know why I'm going to say how much he's got. He's embarrassed, but have a guess how many he's got.
32.
Higher.
Wow, 48.
Higher.
70.
Higher.
How can he have any stocks?
Higher, go on, Steve, higher.
Hundreds.
Lower. Oh, Bruce is dead. Oh, sorry. What? 84, you say? Nearly there. Steve, higher.
86.
Ooh, nearly. Ooh, yeah, it's on your turn, Steve. Pete.
87.
87, 89. Yes. Oh, didn't he do well? Yes. 87. He said, I've had a problem with FOMO. Telling me you have.
yeah.
You know, fear of missing out. He jumped on stocks that are hot. And
is he up or down?
I don't know. It's a good point.
I don't know, it takes too long to look at them all.
And I thought, as an answer, I did think about this most of the afternoon. It's a good idea, because I've often thought about this, and I've often thought about, you know, spreading yourself too thinly, or having just too much money in one stock. And I thought about it for a while. That I looked at my portfolio, that okay, generally I haven't got more than 10%, pretty much. It's 11-12%, but generally it's between 5-10%. And if you look at it, and I thought, right, okay, let's break it down. And because let's say for round figures, sake of round figures, you've got a portfolio of £100,000, right? I think if you've got anything more than 10%, and in risky stock, in a risky stock that could get knocked out, and I mean delisted or something go wrong, that's a big chunk of your portfolio to miss. 10% drop. You know, if you want to earn 30% a year, you know, then taking away 10% of your overall portfolio worth is going to make it very hard, you know? So yeah. I would suggest, if go nothing above 10%, or don't be too rigid, but nothing above 10%. But also, if that does well, that one stock, then let's be honest, so let's say you got 100 grand, 10 grand in one stock, it doubles, all right? So what's the percentage gain there, guys, for your portfolio? Are you still there? Hello?
Come on, Steve.
I thought it was a question for Pete.
No, Steve.
So listen, you're 100 grand, all right, in stocks. One of them has got 10 grand in it. It doubles. Yeah. What's the gain of your entire portfolio?
10%.
10%? It's going to run about 110. So you made 10%. So even though it's doubled, you know, portfolio's done 10%. That's all right. It's not amazing, but it's fine. But obviously, if it goes the other way, it wouldn't be too bad either. But also, how little? So if you spread out even more, of say 5%, now it's like if that doubles, you only get, you know, overall portfolio's only achieved 5% gain. You know?
Yes.
So I mean, I'm thinking, so there's no point really going below 5% in my mind. You know, there's no point going below 5%, because even if a stock does really well and it's only taking up 1% of your portfolio, how much is your portfolio going to do? It's not going to do that well at all, is it? So let's just say you own a stock as 1%, say a grand in your, out of 100,000, and in 10 bags, that's only 10% gain you've made.
But the other thing is the amount of money you're putting in is, I personally think it's worth putting a very equal amount in each. Just for that reason, because it's easy to get carried away, and then you start putting in more per stock, and then so your percentage is then increasing. But you've got to be disciplined. So if your thing is, I don't know, a grand or 2 grand or whatever per stock, and it's just about sticking to that.
But I change as well. If I got a very risky stock, I will put 5% in it. You know, if it's a small cap, very risky, got a 5% punt. Now, if it's like a bigger cap, you know, dividend paying stock, I'm happy to go 10% even a bit more at that. You know, and so you've got to look at how risky a stock is as well, because you know you're more likely to do double on a smaller stock, but it's more risk. So you know, it's a lot of moving parts, but it makes a bit of sense to have some sort of parameters like that, doesn't it? To think, okay, I'm going to not put more than 10% in, or if I am going to put more than 10%, it shouldn't be that too much of a risky stock, because you know.
Are you saying, so you have like it divvied up, let's say roughly you're saying 5%, and it's going to be equal amount between the shares, so you're saying your portfolio will have 20 shares basically, you know, kind of thing. And that, then does it become a discipline thing if you've got to sell one of those before
It's not 20 shares. I suppose it is.
It kind of is if you're going to be trying to be equal. Well, that's what I try and do, and try and keep an equal amount, and you know what I'm investing is always a similar amount. I don't know if that's the right kind of strategy, but for me, then I know that if one doubles or one does well, one collapses, you know where you are across the board. But then, like, you've got then to be disciplined, because then otherwise you'll end up with 87 stocks, because you'll keep just buying and buying.
Yeah, exactly.
So you do need to then go, well, I need to sell one before I buy another one. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, no, because you always keep, try not to overexpose. If a stock does very well and you see it's like taking up 20% of your portfolio now because it's outperformed, then top slice to bring it in line on a risk basis, and then you can buy something else maybe, you know? But So because your portfolio's grown anyway in value, so you can fit another one in somewhere. But 5-10%, I think, maximum. Some hedge fund managers, look at Neil Woodford, for example. He's had a nightmare of a time, but I mean, you know, the maximum there is like 5%. He's got about sort of 60 stocks. You know, fund managers will have lots of stocks because they have lots of money.
But that's their full-time job. So they're able to watch all those stocks all the time. Yeah. You know, I'm busy doing other stuff. I wouldn't have time to...
Yeah, you haven't got a full-time job, have you?
That's a good point. I wouldn't be able to watch 87 stocks, or like I'd miss RNSs or whatever, and then I don't know. I could have sold that, but I wasn't aware of them or whatever. But I don't know. Good luck to him.
Okay, just another couple of stocks I want to talk about. Jangada Mines. I like Jangada. Brian McMaster is the guy behind Jangada. He's the chairman of Harvest Minerals as well, which has got 10 bag of potential if they do what they think they're going to do. But Jangada, they've got a drought compliant global resource, including to include 1 million ounces of PGM and gold, 109 million pounds of nickel, 23 million pounds of copper, 6.4 million pounds of cobalt, and 608 kilotons of chrome. So, and they're going to be, what I like about this, they released an update, right? And they're expected to do a pre-feasibility study completed by the end of this year, Q4 2017. They've saved $470,000 on the feasibility study because the quality and quantity of the historic drilling, which was used to be owned by Anglo American but sold in the downturn, it's going to be good enough. This is the sampling they did, the assays and the drilling that the Anglo American did, are good enough to look at the pre-feasibility study. They're going to be trial mining at this early 2018. Now, they've got their project area, listen to this, 55,000 hectares that includes 3 mining licenses and 44 exploration licenses. All right. Now, they've likened this in Brazil to the Bushveld complex in South Africa. Now, if you know anything about mining, it's a phenomenally prolific area in the world for platinum. The biggest producer of platinum in the world. You know, I mean, I can't remember the stats. It's something like half the world's platinum has come from South Africa, the Bushveld complex. It's ridiculous. But they've also got a lot of political issues there in South Africa at the moment. You know, a lot of things going wrong, and it's hard to get business there. So it's worth looking at Jangada, J-A-N, market cap 10 million, you know, they've got money, they're coming into news at the end of this year, and I think this could be a huge resource here of platinum sort of gold metals there, group of metals, sorry, PGM, that means platinum group metals, and they've got all this sort of like copper, nickel credits as well there coming out, so it's going to be, you know, very economical to mine. It's going to be, you know, quite cheap because they've got all this kind of, but it's just worth looking at. Jangada, I really like Brian McMaster. He knows his stuff. He's a very sharp guy, very turned on, switched on guy. So I think look at JAN is worth looking at. Do you still hold a Vestarion, Pete?
I do, yes.
I like that. I bought some more because I was 10% yes. down. I bought it 15 pence last time or something ridiculous, but or 15 and a half pence, I think it was. Or 16, something like that. But I've 10% down, so I bought some more. And then some news came out, which I quite liked. But I mean, the news wasn't mind blowing, right? Its subsidiary, Total Carbide, which is not the graphene section. They've got quite a few different sections to the company, and they're a revenue generating company. But they secured its largest ever single order in the aerospace sector for parts to be used by the UK's largest aero engine manufacturer. This is good, right? The order's total value of 200,000, which is not to be sniffed at. It's for precision components. But what I like about this is they're dealing in graphene. Now, when people talk about graphene, says who's going to benefit from graphene, which sectors, which industries, aerospace is always mentioned. Always. Yeah. Because graphene can make planes lighter but stronger, you know, so they're more fuel efficient. And so to have this connection with this major, you know, a large aerospace manufacturer is very good. And I can only think, and at the end there, what I like at the end is a little remark at the end from Neil, the CEO, said, "This has been a very busy period across Vestarion. As a whole, we are seeing a record levels of inquiries from potential purchasers of our products and users of our technology. We look forward to making further announcements in the coming weeks and months." And I'm thinking, they've got their foot in the door, you know, with a major global aerospace player here. And they got graphene, you know. I think this is only good for the company, I think. And also, a while back, if you look at Neil's Twitter feed, he was visiting, having a chat with Continental, you know, one of the biggest tire manufacturers in the world, you know. And even to get a meeting with those guys, and he was saying, I was discussing, you know, stuff with the top guys there, and they were talking about, you know, putting sort of graphene into all their products, pretty much, you know, and discussing it. And I'm not saying they will do that, but he said, but, you know, 3 years ago, I wouldn't have even gone in the door of those guys, you know. And yeah, if you look at Continental, it's a multi-billion, you know, dollar company. It's massive, you know, and so I'm just thinking, at the moment, he said on the podcast, he's so busy meeting people, phenomenal, you know, and they are going to come off, you know, some of these deals will come off, maybe with massive companies, but it just takes time, you know, because like the graphene is still very much cutting edge, and so it's worth looking at. And talking about cutting edge, by the way, I do think right now, and I banged on about it before a while back, and it's the last stock I'll talk about this week, and it's Powerhouse Energy. I think you should look at that. Because the more I read about it, the more I see the potential here. And yeah, the hydrogen market is going to be huge. We all know everything, you know, all the governments are going towards, you know, non-petrol, non-diesel cars. They're all saying clean energy is the way forward. Okay, yeah, they're all the way forward. But how are we going to generate that much electricity, you know? Well, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really challenging. In the National Grid, it says it can be impossible to... If everyone starts going to, like, electric cars, only 1% now of cars purchased electric cars. If everyone goes towards that, it's going to be impossible. So, you know, a lot of companies are going towards hydrogen as well. They reckon that's the way forward. And if you think of it, Powerhouse Energy, their model is now producing hydrogen gas from syngas, from waste, from tyres, which you can't do anything with, pretty much, apart from putting on the floor of children's playgrounds, yeah, which there aren't that many being built, really, so you can't... they can turn that into energy, from waste energy. I think this is a phenomenal story, I really do, and there's no one else like this. And to produce hydrogen at the moment, I wrote some notes on this, right? But essentially, to produce hydrogen at the moment is so inefficient. First and foremost, but it's two different ways. It's called steam gasification or something, and electrolysis. By one of them is you produce 10 tons, for every ton of hydrogen you produce 10 tons of CO2, which is the stuff you're trying to get rid of, which is no good.
Yeah.
And the other one is, like, to produce it by electric, you have to produce, it takes more electric to produce than you can generate energy from. The energy, you know, needed to produce it is more than the energy you can get from it. Yeah, when you actually get the hydrogen. So two very inefficient ways of producing hydrogen. Powerhouse Energy generate hydrogen from waste, and there's no emissions, none at all. I think that is phenomenal. Now, if this works, I just genuinely think it'll be, ignore 10 bagger, it's a 1,000 bagger. If it works, it is an alchemy, you know, from base metals into gold, that's what it's like. And I just think, at the moment, it's in a weak spot, and as one of these guys, I'd say, do your research right now, because it's getting towards that placing level of 1 pence last. And I think if they produce more trials, successful trials that they have been doing, this really is, completely changes the world, because everything's headed in a clean tech direction. All the government's behind it, and yet waste is piling up, and so they can turn the waste into clean energy. That's phenomenal. You couldn't ask for a better. They're solving a problem, two problems, with their one unit. And, you know, I don't think you underestimate that kind of potential in a company, you know? You can probably tell I do own stock in it, of course.
I don't do.
Be odd if I did. Don't I don't own any stock at the moment, but I'm very enthusiastic about it. No, so I do. But I think one of those, it's the kind of things you never know. It's like, well, you know, when I took my first, you know, punt in EVRH, you know, Melody Virtual Reality. I didn't know, but I knew VR was quite hot. I didn't know I'd have a 10 bagger on my hand, but I just genuinely think this could be a 10 bagger. You know, we took my, you know, a market cap of 10 million. That's all it is. Yeah. And I'm thinking the potential for big. And one of the things he said, last thing I'm going to say on this, he said, I'll give you an example of where we can be used. So they got, you know, these little mobile units they've got, you know, gas, and they can be taken to the place where the waste is being. So unlike at the moment, for example, most stuff is not recycled, most of it is incinerated. It costs millions and millions and millions to put up one of these incinerator plants, and then these companies have to truck the waste to that plant. Now they just put their, you know, their unit in an area that creates waste, so that it's, you know, it's completely mobile. And he said one of these places that are good for that is, you mentioned something like Amazon, who deliver from a central hub, you know, so they've got central bases there, and they have a lot of packaging there. That basically they drop off things, they have to unpackage it, so they come back to these hubs as well. They've got loads of packaging, because basically they'll go to a shop somewhere or deliver something, or any delivery company, and they'll take packaging back from the thing, right? And he said, that packaging, you just put one of those gas units in their hub, in their transport hub, They would chuck all that stuff in one of these units. It would create hydrogen. You power the trucks off hydrogen. So essentially, you imagine that, the power of that. They've no need to put diesel in, expensive diesel in their trucks. You know, they just basically, the waste they're generating be changed into energy for the trucks they're driving. I think that's phenomenal. If that works, yeah. That's phenomenal. You know, that is amazing. So that's why I'm just genuinely excited about that. When I think about it more and more, it could be, as long as they can scale this up, which they can, because the tests are going well. Like I said, all they need is more is units. So, distributed modular gasification. So that's what it is, in modules. So that's why it's scalable. But check it out. PHE, Steve, Pete, it's a risky thing. You never know. Mm. It's one of these things. It's high risk, but the potential, high reward potential. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about it? Steve, what do you think about that?
No, I think it sounds great in concept, but as you said, it doesn't work.
Look at the last test, and Keith said to me, listen, I said, is it going to work, Keith? He said, well, listen, our tests are working. We generated 50% hydrogen, no emissions whatsoever, none. Yeah, I mean, he said, we just scale this up, we're doing it, more extended tests, we're getting data every time. And he said to me, when I said, is it going to work? He said, it's physics. It's not a creative problem you have to solve. It's physics. If something doesn't work, you alter it on a physical level, you know, a chemical level, and you just do incremental changes, you know, to get the right result at the end. You know, this plus this equals this. Or add a bit more this, and he said, we will get there, and we're starting to get there now. You know, look at our last test. We are super excited about the last test. 50% hydrogen, 50% syngas, which can be used, by the way. By the way, the CO2 and the CO, there was the offshoot, the byproducts, can also be used to electrify, to put into the grid. So you can generate energy via electricity. But hydrogen is where the money's in. Generating hydrogen is where the money is, but they can also generate electricity as well, put back in the grid. So I just think it's a phenomenal little concept. Anyway, I think we've done half an hour, haven't we, really?
And a bit. But no, it does sound interesting. I've been looking at it since you were talking about the other week, and it is, it's one of those ones that you kind of go, I could see the potential, I can see it being one of those stocks. You look back and go, oh yeah, I should have bought that when Justin was talking about it.
But if you look at it, it's gone down a little bit. It's failing to break that. It's got up to 1.3 pence, and it's come back down to 1.1 at the moment. But if you look at something like ITM Power, which is the AIM company, and they're just creating hydrogen power stations, right? And they've just hooked up with Shell. And they create hydrogen from electricity. Right? And if you look at the share price of these companies, they've just hooked up with Shell. Shell is going to be producing these, going in partnership with them to produce these hydrogen fuel stations. You know, and hydrogen, the reason why it's going to be better than electricity, even with good chargers, it can take like an hour or something to charge a car up. Hydrogen, you can fill your car within a couple of minutes. It's essentially like a petrol, you know, that fast. But so they're doing it via electricity from the grid, and they use electrolysis, I think, a way of doing it. But again, you know, you use a heck of a lot of electricity to create hydrogen, so it doesn't make any sense in my head. But and yet they got backers from Shell, you know, massive company, obviously Shell, one of the biggest companies in the world. And I'm thinking, if PHE's technology takes off, Shell would have no problem jumping in bed. Majors would have no problem jumping in bed with this company if they can prove this up, you know. One of the things, like high risk, massive reward, you know. And so you never know, because it's cutting edge, and it can all go wrong. But if it goes right, wow, strap in, lads. We're on a super turbocharged, hydrogen-fueled super rocket. You know what I'm saying?
or something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Any plans for the weekend? Steve, you going to America or somewhere, Los Angeles or something like that?
No, I'm dead for holiday this year. I'm going to sleep this weekend because I've not done much this week.
Okay. All right, then. Lovely. Yeah, all right. We'll have a nice weekend, boys.
Lovely. Thank you very much. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.